Hello, and welcome to The Board Table, a podcast from the North Carolina School Boards Association. I'm Leanne Winner, the association's executive director and your host. Here on The Board Table, we want to equip North Carolina school board members with the tools and knowledge they need to govern successfully. We also want to help school administrators, community members, and parents learn more about current issues in public education. In the current environment, public and private entities alike face many challenges and emerging issues in planning and preparing for today and the future. The last couple of years have been dominated by the pandemic, but as you begin to move forward, what issues might be emerging and ripe for consideration as you plan within your school district? During this podcast, please join NCSBA staff members Donna Lynch and David Byrd as they discuss and pose questions for our listeners about a number of emerging issues to consider in your risk management planning. I'll now turn it over to Donna and David.
Thank you, Leanne. Hello, and thank you for tuning into our podcast, Risk Management, 10 Emerging Issues to Consider. I'm Donna Lynch, NCSBA Litigation Counsel and head of NCSBA's Risk Management Department, through which I oversee the North Carolina School Boards Trust, NCSBA's Risk Management Program for North Carolina Boards of Education. NCSBT, as we call it, NCSBT, provides participating NCSBA member boards with an alternative to commercial insurance for responding to their various risk management needs. We are proud to be celebrating our 40th anniversary in 2022 in partnering with North Carolina Boards of Education and providing risk management protection through the NCSBT programs. I'm joined today by David Byrd, NCSBA's Claims and Risk Services Consultant, who works with me in the NCSBA Risk Management Department in providing our members with various training and risk management services, particularly in the area of workers' compensation, which is where David has extensive expertise and experience. Today, David and I would like to draw your attention to a number of emerging risk management issues and topics that have the potential to impact, and in many instances are already impacting, your school boards and districts. These are topics that many employers and industry executives will be watching over the next few years. We believe these issues will influence many decisions your districts will make in the near term and beyond, and we'll ask you a number of questions and pose issues for you without really having the answers for you. Our goal is to get you thinking and planning for these issues as you move forward. Many of the issues we'll mention involve workers' compensation and employment-related concerns. At the outset, I do want to remind everyone that our podcast is intended to be informational in nature and to provide risk management information. It is not intended as legal advice. If you have questions about a particular legal issue, you should always consult with your local legal counsel. So now, David, let's dive right in with an issue that is always relevant, but has been exacerbated by the pandemic.
Thanks, Donna. Our first topic is what we call talent challenges. That's the problem of getting the proper talent or staff to walk through your door, accept a job, and stay there. Over the last several years, we've probably heard about the graying of the workforce. That's just us getting older. But the pandemic has really accelerated the retirement of those older workforce members. Are you doing enough to recruit new people and to train and cross-train your existing school staff? What are you doing now to impact your talent retention? What are you doing to boost employees into leadership development? What are you doing in training and support to make your employees feel like part of the greater good? Are you listening to your employees and acting on feedback with your go-forward plans? Now, I deal mostly with workers' compensation, so I like to bring things back to that. Know that new employees and aging employees are the two groups that can affect your workers' compensation program the most. New employees are the most likely employees to get injured in accidents. With inadequate training or hastily trained employees being new to the job. older employees are actually the least likely to get injured, but their injuries are the most severe. Older bones and muscles don't heal like young ones do. So when an older worker gets injured, it's usually more serious than when a young worker gets injured. So we'll talk about these topics a little bit later, but Donna's going to mention the elephant in the room right now.
Yes, the next issue is COVID continues. As COVID-19 continues to dominate the conversation and much of everything we do, it continues to create havoc with changing guidelines almost daily and hourly for many of you, but it also is continuing with the absences that you're grappling with due to illness, compounding existing school staff shortages. We at the Trust have seen litigation related to school masking and COVID policies. We all had hoped that by 2021, there would be some return to what we consider normal, but that has been pushed back. We now think, will it be 2022 or even 2023? Who knows? All we are going to say about COVID is that we are years away from really knowing what the ultimate impact of the COVID pandemic is. We're all now just trying to learn to live with COVID. What we will talk about a little later is the short staffing and workers' compensation issues, which have been directly impacted by the COVID pandemic.
Okay, thank you, Donna. And we'll leave COVID right there for now. And we'll talk about our next topic, which is fundamentally important to the workers' compensation world, and that all of the workers' compensation nerds like myself are watching. And that's the new 500-week cap on temporary total disability in North Carolina. Temporary total disability is the weekly check that injured workers get while they're out of work. Now, I call this a new cap, but it was actually established in 2011 and applied to all workers' compensation injuries after that point. Before 2011, there was a 400-week cap that was written into the statute. But that 400-week cap had actually been diluted by the courts to make it basically an unlimited weekly benefit. So you could get benefits for life instead of just 400 weeks. In 2011, both sides of the North Carolina bar, plaintiff's attorneys and defense attorneys, plus state representatives, came together and rewrote a lot of the workers' compensation statutes, trying to clear up some issues that were going on at the time. That resulted in a compromise where the cap was lifted from 400 to 500 weeks, but language was included in the statute to try to make that a 500-week hard cap, unless the injured worker has suffered a total destruction of earning capacity. So that allows for seriously injured employees to continue to receive lifetime benefits they would need to continue to get them. But for those less seriously injured who still retain some ability to work, you're stopped from getting your weekly benefits after 500 weeks. Now, just to note, medical benefits are not affected by this 500-week cap. So there was a legal process built in 2011, whereby the injured worker can apply for those benefits after 450 of the 500 weeks had elapsed. And so those of you who are quick with math might realize that it's now been about 500 weeks from 2011. So we're now seeing the North Carolina Industrial Commission deputy commissioners and full commission deciding cases of whether to extend the 500 weeks for individual cases. So far, it looks like the full commission is going with the language requiring a total destruction of earning capacity and making that cap a hard cap at 500 weeks. But the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court have not had time to hear any of these cases yet on appeal. So the courts will be hearing those cases over the next year or so, and we will be paying attention to the outcomes of those cases to see whether or not the reforms of 2011 are going to actually be reforms or whether we're going to continue with a watered-down soft cap like we had before.
Okay, our next topic is the impact of the global economy on our schools. The economy is a significant topic that we're only going to briefly touch on. The U.S. is currently seeing its strongest inflation in 40 plus years. There's currently the U.S.-China trade war going on, and supply chain issues are affecting everything that you purchase for your school district. If you have a breakdown in your auto fleet, will you even be able to repair or replace those automobiles? Do you have the supplies that you need to start the 2022 school year and a plan for the 2023 year? If you're starting a new building project in your school district, your projected costs are going up as we speak. All of these things are impacted and affected by global conditions. Also, as we record this podcast, there is the ongoing and escalating war between Russia and Ukraine, which presents a significant crisis with unknown future impacts. Russia has vowed to retaliate for global sanctions, and one of Russia's most alarming tools is cyber attacks.
And cyber is our next big issue. We just want to point out that cyber attacks and ransomware were at an all-time high prior to the current war in Ukraine, but things are expected to get worse going forward. Cyber protection is getting harder and harder to get, and it's much more expensive than just a few years ago. And as cyber attacks have gone up in the last week since the war in Ukraine, they're only going to continue to be harder to get. So according to a recent Safety National webinar, premiums for cyber coverage are up over 96% in the third quarter of last year for those entities that could even get coverage. So many of your school districts may be dealing with a situation where you can't qualify for cyber coverage now because of more stringent underwriting requirements. New requirements are strict, and those companies that will still write the coverage are less tolerant of risks. It's important for you to prepare for a cyber incident in your school district, whether you have coverage or not. You must know what organizations you will turn to for help in the event of an attack, and what internal teams will be available to assist, and what the role of each member is. All this information should be on paper at your desk. Remember, your computer or laptop may be compromised, so a paper copy is vital. Don't wait for it to happen to your district to figure out what your response will be. Ransomware groups are not going away. Some key terms you may be familiar with from your policy or renewals are multi-factor authentication for access to systems, end-to-end security encryption for access by virtual workers, and vulnerability scans. Now, if you participate in our EOGL program, NCSBT provides some limited cyber protection for our members. Donna, do you have anything to add on that?
Thanks, David. You're right. For members of the NXPA EOGL fund, NXPA does provide some limited cyber liability protection and a supplemental cyber reimbursement endorsement for certain expenses that may not be covered by a school district cyber insurance or by the resources that are available through the North Carolina Department of Information Technology. As many of you know, the state provides through the Department of Information Technology various resources that assist public entities in responding to cyber attacks. Also, NCSBA has an endorsed cyber program through Victor Insurance Services that works with school districts that are interested in helping them to identify and to try to place them with cyber insurance markets that are willing to underwrite cyber insurance based on their risk profile. So if your school district is currently looking for cyber insurance and you would like to have the assistance of NCSBA through our endorsed program, please reach out to our office and we will put you in touch with the broker at Victor Insurance Services to try to help you in evaluating whether or not they can place cyber insurance for your school district.
Thank you, Donna. That's great information. I'll bring up our next topic, which is another workers' compensation issue, and that is the continuously changing interpretation of what an independent contractor is versus an employee here in North Carolina. So there are separate and different rules for who is an independent contractor according to federal law, IRS rules, state rules, and workers' comp laws. So as your district partners with more entities, ask, whose workers' compensation policy covers these workers? We get that call every so often. A district wants to know, we're partnering with this other school district, another entity in our county, whose workers' compensation policy is going to cover these workers? So just because you issue someone a 1099 doesn't mean that they're an independent contractor for workers' compensation purposes. It's good to make sure that the contractors you hire to perform work also have active workers' comp coverage. Often school districts ask for proof of liability coverage, but it's also a good idea to ask for proof of workers' compensation coverage. The workers' comp system in North Carolina does not like to leave injured workers without coverage. So it's entirely possible for you to end up being held responsible for a workers' compensation claim for someone you consider to be an independent contractor.
Okay. Our next issue is rising healthcare costs. Everyone knows that healthcare costs are going up, and those rising prices affect us all, but they impact workers' compensation too, as the price of getting our injured workers healthy keeps rising. In our state, the North Carolina Industrial Commission regulates workers' compensation, and they have established a medical fee schedule, and all treatment must be billed and paid according to that fee schedule for the enumerated services. This fee schedule has done a great job over the last several years of helping to somewhat mitigate the healthcare cost increases for our injured workers and their workers' comp treatments. However, creative hospital groups and medical providers are finding ways to avoid the fee schedule. In-office prescription dispensing, overcharging for surgical implants or durable medical equipment, and requiring multiple unnecessary follow-up visits are just a few of the ways that providers try to skirt the rules. As a workers' compensation coverage provider, that is something that we try to look out for, but it is also something that each school district can monitor when selecting your preferred provider list for your employees. You should have a conversation with your district's workers' comp administrator about the medical providers on your preferred provider list to make sure that you have the best providers for your injured workers.
Thank you, Donna. Our next issue, we're going to go back and talk about the labor shortage, as well as the impact on workers' compensation. So we're currently seeing near record low levels of unemployment, yet we're having near record high labor shortages. Basically, many people during the pandemic, for dozens of reasons, are no longer working or looking for work. Wages are rising as employers compete for workers. Who are you competing with for workers? You're no longer competing with industries paying lower minimum wage, as those paying low and minimum wage are now paying more. So a great part of the shortage may be permanent, as the pandemic accelerated the baby boomer generation's retirement. So older workers have retired during the pandemic. I know both my parents retired during the pandemic as well. These labor shortages are impacting workers' compensation in many ways. First, your premium may go down as a result of lower payroll, but that's probably a bad thing. If your payroll is lower, that means you have fewer workers doing the jobs that used to take more workers. Inadequate, improperly, or hastily trained staff will lead to increased injuries. Longer shifts and doing more work per person makes workers more susceptible to overexertion injuries. Training becomes a huge factor when recently hired employees are rushed into a job for which they are not prepared. So no one knows how much of the labor shortage is short-term versus permanent, but you do need to adapt as you can. So other industries may be able to increase automation to make up for a lack of physical workers, but we can't do that in our school districts. Opportunities to do so for us are just not there.
Okay. Another issue that employers, workers' compensation professionals, and employment attorneys are just starting to get a glimpse of is the legalization of marijuana in our neighboring states. There are discussions of North Carolina legalization, but nothing looks imminent at this point. However, legalized marijuana dispensaries and legalized marijuana use are coming to Virginia very soon. How are our northern border school districts and other employers going to deal with an employee population that may be legally using marijuana at home in Virginia, and what effect will that have on those employers? What are we going to do when a Virginia medical provider starts prescribing marijuana for pain in North Carolina workers' compensation patients? The answer is, we have no idea. No one really knows at this point. In fact, this matter is currently before the U.S. Supreme Court on the issue of whether laws against the possession of cannabis preempt employers from being compelled to pay for medical cannabis. Maybe we'll have a ruling on this issue within the next several months.
Thanks, Donna. And our last topic is the rising cost of workers' compensation, but not just in the dollars and cents that you pay for your premiums, but in the human cost of accidents and injuries as well. Every person out of work with an injury exacerbates the employee shortage that we've talked about a few times already. So finding ways to keep an injured worker at work with light duty restrictions becomes even more important. Every study of workers' compensation has always shown that the faster accidents are reported to the coverage provider, the better results are achieved. When needed, and a claim is reported in a fast manner, we can authorize medical treatment and prescriptions faster. We can facilitate needed medical referrals. We can begin nurse case management, and we can talk with the injured worker to explain workers' compensation and start their benefits right away. All these things lead to better outcomes for you as a district and for the injured worker. Now, if the employee is unable to report the injury in a timely fashion, or if there's a delay in reporting it to the coverage provider by the school personnel, then delayed medical treatment, delayed referrals, slow prescriptions, and late benefits can occur, leading to increased or unnecessary time out of work for the injured worker, as well as the injured worker having a bad experience with workers' compensation. One thing that I'd like to encourage each of the listeners to do is to self-evaluate where your district stands right now on the ease of reporting an accident or injury. So go on your district's website and ask yourself, how easy is it for an injured worker or their supervisor to access workers' compensation information on our website in order to start a claim? When you look at your website, so I've looked at many district websites for information on your workers' compensation programs, and I can tell you that some districts have clearly labeled workers' compensation information and directions posted on the website on how to file a workers' comp claim, who to contact, where to go to. Usually it's in the HR or benefits section. I can also tell you that other districts have no information at all available for an injured worker or supervisor to use on their website. Some of those that do have information, a lot of it may be stale, some with old contact information for the district's workers' comp administrator, maybe an old coverage provider information or old prescription and medical provider information. Some districts may give out the workers' compensation information to employees in an employee handbook or handout, but do you give them an updated handbook every year? If not, the information is probably old and may not be relevant. So I challenge you as your homework to go on your district's website and see if you can figure out what to do if you were an employee who got injured on the job. If you can't figure it out, or if the information is stale, you have some work to do in the present to get ready for the future.
Thank you, David, and thank you to our listeners for tuning in today to our podcast on emerging risk management issues. As we said at the outset, we wanted to raise a number of issues. We didn't provide a lot of answers, but wanted to pose a lot of questions to get you thinking and help you start planning for the future. These are issues that we believe are issues you're all going to have to grapple with and maybe have already started to grapple with as you move forward. We hope you found some of the issues and questions that we've raised informative. And if you have questions for either of us, please feel free to contact us. You can reach us and find our information on the risk management page of the NCSBA website at www.ncsba.org. Thank you.
We hope you have found the information in today's podcast helpful as your district grapples with some of the emerging issues discussed. Have you ever heard the saying, if you're not at the table, then you're on the menu? Subscribe to this podcast to make sure you always have a seat at the table. If there's a topic you want us to cover in a future episode of The Board Table, let us know. You can find us on Twitter at NCSBA, Facebook at NC School Boards Association, or email us at info@ncsba.org. Until next time.